Okay, it is 6:30, I have the gavel, and we are going ahead and starting. I know it's been a long day for some of us, so I'm sure they'd like to go ahead and get started with the meeting. I am Catherine, I am the chair, and I will start by checking, has everybody taken a look at the agenda, which is available on the table by the door? Does anybody have any major issues with it? Hearing none, I am going to pull a Jack Evans and just go ahead and approve it. I wish I could talk as quickly as he does when he does these board meetings. So we will have public comment session after we hear from our two guests today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to them and have them start talking. I also want to point out that Sawyer, who is the chair of our safety subcommittee, will be effectively leading this particular discussion. She is far more knowledgeable about some of the details on the safety stuff, and she was the lead author on the questions that went to WMATA. So, Sawyer? Oh, and one more piece of housekeeping before I completely turn it over. Sitsa is likely to be calling in, assuming we can get everything up and running. So we may have the voice of God coming out of the ceiling at some point soon, and that'll be Sitsa. If not, then we'll just all have to tell him what he missed.
Just WMATA staff, yeah, so it just went up through the chain. But thanks, Catherine, and I guess I would like to start by welcoming you and thanking you for coming. Leading up to this meeting, the safety committee has been working to solidify its work plan and areas of interest for this year. Those points kind of include working with WMATA for safety events, rider and individual safety, bus stop safety, as well as safety messaging. Those are kind of preliminary areas of interest, and as you can kind of see from the types of questions. But when most people talk about safety in WMATA, the conversation almost inherently goes towards SafeTrack and infrastructure and the reliability and maintenance and the processes surrounding it. And the Safety Committee does recognize the efforts that have been made and are being made and are planned with SafeTrack, but we're hopeful that we can actually have a discussion about other facets of safety as well, as outlined in the questions. And we're interested to learn more about these points, mostly derived from the two safety and security reports that were recently released and presented to the board around personal safety and crime, as well as trainings. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to a fruitful discussion on some of these points, and I hope that we're able to illustrate our willingness to be a sounding board for ideas and provide feedback on any matters that the board wishes. So, with that, hopefully maybe we can get introductions.
We can introduce ourselves around the table just so we're not an anonymous group of folks. We do all have name tags, so I guess the anonymity is limited. But I'm Catherine. By day, I work for the Transportation Research Board. I live in D.C., and I'm the RAC chair.
I am Lorraine Silva, and I represent Arlington County.
Will White, representing Prince George's County.
Connors, at-large member, but I live in D.C.
Deb McKenzie, Arlington County.
Dexter Williams, D.C.
Valerie Cook, D.C.
Nick Bertone, Fairfax County, Virginia.
Matt Washington, Prince
George's
County.
Patrick?
Pat Sheehan, I chair the AAC and a member of this committee from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Sawyer Baker, chair of the Safety and Security Subcommittee and representing Arlington.
Paul Meisner, represent the City of Alexandria.
Hi, Joe Sudd, RAC DC member.
Clarence Landers, I am the vice chair for DC, and I work at Georgetown University.
Bob Fogle, I live in Montgomery County, Maryland, and I'm the vice chair for Maryland.
Well, thank you. I think I should get my statement out of the way and then leave it up to Bob, since he's much more involved with safety than I am.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So I'm Jim Corcoran, and I am the a voting member from Virginia. I am the governor's appointee from Virginia. So I live in Fairfax County. During the day, I run the Northern Virginia Chamber of Commerce. So I really do bring much of the business community's thought process to Metro, and proud to be a member of the Metro Board. So on the board, I am chair of the Audit Committee. And so the Audit Committee, it's easy to see, okay, they do the financial audits. Right now, at this time, financial audits are being done on time, which was not always the case here at Metro. And going back to 2013, 14, and 15, the audits were very much behind. But for fiscal year 2015, they really did catch up. In 2016, it was delivered on time for that year. And so that's only part of what the Audits and Investigations Committee does. So the IG reports to the Audits Committee as well. And as you may know, we just hired a new Inspector General, literally who will start the Monday after Easter. So Helen is retiring, and we've hired Jeff Charrington. Jeff is from the State Department, where he was an assistant or a deputy Inspector General. And like I said, we'll be starting in mid-April. And so under that, the Inspector General does audits and investigations. So if there are investigations which may be brought from an outsider, it could be a whistleblower report, it could be something that rises through the ranks where somebody is seeing something that is not being done correctly, from safety issues to money misappropriations issues to procurement issues, all of those things can be inspected at any time. And then on the audit side, there are regularly scheduled audits around systems, operations, and finances that are being handled by the Inspector General's office. And all of those are a matter of public record. You can see those at any time, the results of all of those audits, from the fare cards and they're currently doing an audit of literally weapons that are in the Metro system. So there's a variety of things there. But the key there is to, you need to follow the money on inspections, right? Is labor being accounted for correctly? Are receivables being accounted for correctly? Is everything where it's supposed to be? And we did have some issues a couple years ago, like I mentioned. So now I will give you my thoughts, and I'm not going to dwell just on safety, Sawyer. I hope you will forgive me for doing that, but that I have an expert to my left here who will dwell some more on that. But I'm going to give you my impression as to what's been taking place with Metro over the last couple of months and what is coming up. And it seems like the budget is always all-consuming. We just approved a budget, both an operations budget and a capital budget, at the last board meeting. It was a big, hard pill to swallow for a lot of jurisdictions. A lot of jurisdictions had to produce a lot of additional revenue for this year's budget as operating subsidies. Number one, because fare revenues are down, costs are up, and someone has to come up with those expenses. In Virginia, it's each of the jurisdictions that have to approve that money, so it's coming out of jurisdictional, when I say jurisdictions, it's the city of Alexandria and Arlington and the counties of Fairfax and soon to be Loudoun, but also also Falls Church and Fairfax cities. They actually have to come up with that from their local budget, which is coming out of real estate taxes and others, so it's taking away from other services. 2018 was hard. 2019 is going to be impossible. 2019 will be hard because if you look back at how we produced the budget, getting to the correct budget this year, there was a lot of long-term capital funding that was going to be used to close the gap. There was a $290 million gap. A good portion of that was closed by using long-term debt to pay for some of the SafeTrack things that were being done this year and so forth. But that's really not going to be available to Metro next year. So I think what you're going to have to see is continued viewing of the finances, but also I think what you're seeing are people are actually looking now. We have to look at not just finances. We do have to look at the governance. We do have to look at the operations of the system. And I think what you saw recently, there was an announcement from the governor of Virginia, was it 2 weeks ago, that they are have have hired and are appointing former Secretary of Transportation, U.S. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood, to head up a commission. The governor of Maryland seems to be in support of this, and I'm not sure where the mayor is on this. I haven't seen clarity on that, and I'm not saying she's against or for. I just have not seen where Mayor Bowser and the city council may be on this. But the commission under former Secretary LaHood is going to look at finances, operations, and governance. And by the way, there are issues with each of those that need to be addressed. But I think what I have witnessed over the last 6 months for sure is, from my perspective in the community, there is recognition that major changes do need to take place with Metro. And it's not just fixing budget holes. I do think that a lot of things have been done, and I think General Manager Paul Wiedefeld has done a lot of tremendous things in changing the course of the future of Metro. The whole SafeTrack initiative was not something Paul came in here with on his agenda, but when he recognized the severity of the issues, he took action. He went back and actually invested money that he basically forced the jurisdictions to come up with that money last year to pay for SafeTrack, and that is being done. And while SafeTrack is not going to be the end-all, be-all for Metro, when you look at that, what's being done, when you look at the new rail cars that are being purchased, when you look at the buses that are being purchased, all of these are pieces of bringing Metro back to a safe, reliable system, and that is what we need, is a safe, reliable, and sustainable system. So I do feel there is a – you can feel this directional change of the aircraft carrier, if you want to use that analogy, but there's still a long way to go. And I know we're going to have questions and answers afterwards, but with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bob.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. My name's Bob Lavi, and my day job is I'm the Chief Safety Officer for Federal Railroad Administration. I'm the Associate Administrator for Safety. And so in my day job, I have responsibility for safety and safety oversight, including regulations for the freight railroad systems, commuter rails, Amtrak, and inner-city operations around the country in the 48 states and Alaska. So a lot of my staff, I have 700 people in the Office of Railroad Safety. A lot of those folks are safety inspectors that go out and inspect track, signal systems, rolling stock. They check hazardous material shipments and other types of infrastructure. With that, I was selected to serve on the board by Secretary Fox. Many of you are aware that NTSB asked or wanted Secretary Fox to assign the Federal Railroad Administration to have oversight of Washington Metro. However, Secretary Fox decided that Federal Transit Administration should have oversight, and to make sure that we had extensive oversight, he asked me to serve on the board. So I've been here, I guess, about 10 months now. I'm on a two-year term, and I serve at the pleasure of the Secretary. And now we have Secretary Chow, who I've talked to a couple of times about WMATA. She's very aware of some of the issues. I just received an email from Mr. Wiedefeld. He's had his first meeting with Secretary Chow, and she seems to be very supportive. So I'm intimately familiar with Washington Metro. Before, I worked at Federal Railroad Administration. I worked at National Transportation Safety Board for about 10 years, and I was investigator in charge on a couple of accidents. I worked on the most memorable, the Shady Grove accident that we had back probably in the 90s, I think, 96 or so, a very tragic accident. And what I found was interesting is many of the issues that we had back at that accident still exist here at Washington Metro. So I'm not a security person. Some of the things you talked about, safety on the platform, safety on the trains, some of these are criminal acts. I'm not that person to talk so much about security, but I understand safety, and I understand how you address safety from a system viewpoint. I'm also a WMATA writer. I work near the ballpark at the DOT, and I get on at West Falls Church. I've gone through all the Orange Line safe track blitzes. I've been offloaded. I've been, you know, bumped, bruised, crushed, whatever you want to say. But I take the Orange Line every day to LaFont, get on the Green Line, and get off at a Navy Yard, and then I fight the baseball fans to get back on Washington Metro and get back out on the Orange Line. So I know a lot of the reliability issues, stuck in the tunnel under the river, stuck in the tunnel trying to get to Roslyn. I've lived through that. But in general, I think that the things that are being done at Washington Metro are very necessary. This is like grandma's house where everybody knows an older person, maybe like myself, that got too old to take care of their house, and, you know, things start falling off. You know, it needs paint. The gutters are coming off. This is what Washington Metro is like, because it's just been run into the ground. And now we're paying the price through SafeTrack and some of this other stuff to get at least the infrastructure back up where it needs to be. That affects safety, and it also affects reliability and customer service. But there's deeper issues here at Washington Metro. You heard about the track inspections out on East Falls Church that never took place. There's some cultural issues here that really have to be addressed. And I know that Mr. Lavin, who is the chief safety officer here, has his hands full trying to make sure that those things happen. It's really something that has to go throughout the organization. So you just can't do safe track and fix the track and say everything's done. The whole attitude of how safety and how maintenance is addressed at Washington Metro needs to be looked at and needs to be fixed. And I'll make one more point and then take your questions, and that's that a lot of people think we put FTA in charge of Metro, and as soon as FTA is finished, everything will be good again, and that's absolutely not true. FTA can't do that. And in fact, the inspectors that FTA uses for Washington Metro actually work for me. I lend them three or four inspectors for 3 months at a time. They're detailed to FTA. They go out and inspect the tracks and inspect the operations and the operations center. So that's not the answer. Having a new state safety oversight group, that's not going to do it either. Because Metro actually has to police itself. They have to look at each other and make sure that they're following the policies and procedures every day. If they don't do it within, they will fail miserably. It's just like a business. You know, we take safety very seriously, so we have safety inspectors that come along, and, you know, that's the business I'm in. For finances, we have financial audits that go to make sure things are happening. But, you know, if you own a restaurant or you own a hardware store or something like that, how do you make sure that your customers are satisfied and that you have a good operation? You do it through your management, and that's what has to happen here. So that's going to take a while to get there, but there's been a lot of steps in that direction, and that's really what I'm trying to work with Mr. Lavin on to make sure we do that, and also to make sure that as we do make improvements, that we have good numbers that we can look at, that we can actually measure progress. Because right now, the only thing we're counting is employee injuries and passenger injuries. And all we need is one snowstorm or ice storm, and that, you know, the passenger injuries are going to go through the roof. We had a great winter, not too many issues, but those don't tell the whole story. You guys have all been on the train when we got offloaded somewhere on a platform that you know, people are almost pushed onto the tracks. It's so crowded. I've been in those situations several times, and you know that those are unsafe situations. Those are some of the things that we have to measure. How many offloads do we have? How many times do we have to evacuate a train in a tunnel? And those are some of the statistics that we need to measure going forward to really get a feeling if we're making progress. But I think there is progress to talk about, it's kind of hard to describe it now. But, you know, Washington Metro is making progress on safety. Probably the reliability and the customer services is still lagging, but that should come. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for that. And, yes, I re- reading the reports that were put out with the employee injuries and rider injuries, kind of more minimal statistics. So looking forward to see how you might be measuring those in the future. I guess I'll get started off with just one question, and then maybe Catherine can call on others. We'll keep away from the crime and maybe personal security, but I have a question around training, and you'll see that we've requested kind of a list of what training will be provided to station managers and train operators during 2017, but I think the trainings also speak to this larger culture of safety and security that you speak of and kind of how it's managed. And so I was just wondering if there's been any discussions, at least on the board, about safety trainings for those different individuals, and maybe not just initial trainings, but how that might look in a greater sense with more repetition in those trainings as well. Obviously, it costs money, but I'll leave it to you.
Well, I think training is very important. I think they are making inroads and trying to provide better training. I know that they're getting ready to do some training on safety management systems, which is a method where you actually identify hazards before they end up as accidents. That's very important. When you look at accident statistics, you already had the problem, and you say, well, I guess I better do something about it. With safety management systems, hazard management, you basically go out and look for areas where you're at risk, and you make those corrections before you ever have an accident. Some of that training is going to be going on. I know that we've had some other issues with training, but I've got to say training is sometimes an excuse. People say, well, I need more training. Training doesn't cure everything. If people aren't following policies and procedures that they know about, and they know what policies and procedures are, and they're not following it, that's not a training issue. That's a management oversight issue. And so we retrain people. We retrain people not to pass roadway workers in the tunnel at high speeds. They're supposed to be going slow. They know what the rule says, and yet they still do it. So there's a couple of different aspects to this. Use the training where it'll do work or it'll work for you or provide new information. But frankly, the people that work here should already know what their job is and how to be successful at it. They just need that management oversight.
You know, on that, from there was a comment at one board meeting, I believe it was, that and it came from the general manager before the, and I'm going to paraphrase, before there can be a culture of safety, there needs to be a culture of accountability. And so people have to be accountable for their actions. Bob, you made mention to the fact of the track inspections not being done out prior to the incident in East Falls Church. And a high percentage of the track inspection team were either dismissed or disciplined following that incident. And that is the culture of accountability with that. That doesn't excuse it, but it also does not let it continue. And I will say that there has been a focus, too, on emergency response management. So Metro does not have their own emergency response management team. So we don't have a fire department and a first responders department. They depend on the local jurisdictions to do that. And there has been a lot of coordinated training to make sure that everybody understands their roles and responsibilities when something like that happens. And you're seeing those things happen on bridges across the Potomac, in tunnels, because that's where the most lethal situations can occur. And so that has been stepped up over the last year and a half, and certainly under the people that are there now. And I think one of the things you see with Metro, too, since Mr. Wiedefeld became general manager, the whole top layer of management has turned over, with the exception of the financial team that started just before Paul. Every other area has a new lead in that. I guess communications does not at this point, but the others do as well. So there have been changes, and things are changing as basically in front of our eyes. It's not always easy to see, though.
All right, then we'll go around the table and adhere to the one question per rule until everybody has a chance, and chances are good that we will stick to one question per given timing. So I saw Colin first.
Thanks. So it's no secret at this point that the agency has repeatedly failed to identify issues, whether it's management of finances or parts or, more importantly, you know, safety issues. And we've had to rely on external agencies, federal agencies, to identify those issues and then again to tell us that those issues haven't been dealt with decades later, which is, you know, not only embarrassing but costly to the taxpayer. Now that we have a new incoming Inspector General, what can we expect to change with the role of that office in terms of being more responsive in oversight and bring to light issues? And then I guess, you know, what role should they be playing with regard to the, you know, the safety aspect?
So from an Inspector General standpoint, everybody thinks that the Inspector General of Metro should be the same as an Inspector General of any other federal agency. Metro is not a federal agency, so we don't have to completely follow that model. So there can be differences. But the one thing that we've talked about when developing an annual plan is to make sure the Inspector General is following what the major priorities are of the agency and the system. Right, so let's not go out here and determine that this is important on your own, but let's make sure the Inspector General is thoroughly integrated with the priorities of the organization. And I can't sit here and tell you that that was always the case. And making sure that, track reports being copied, was that something that could have been picked up by the Inspector General? And it has been picked up by the Inspector General, not in the particular case where it happened, but that has been done in the past. And so I think making sure that they are an integral part of the overall management team and not just this inspector out there that is operating on their own. In addition to that, not only is there a new Inspector General, but there's also a new, what is Paul calling his safety audit team? Or he's basically putting together his own audit team so that there's not going to be just the Inspector General, but there will be an oversight audit group. And I excuse me for not knowing the exact name of it, so that there is more more accountability, but also more focus on the priorities of the overall agency, so the general manager is inspecting that group. Not in lieu of the Inspector General, but to make sure that we do have inspections going on that are more appropriate in some cases. So things will be stepped up in that respect. And so the Inspector General retiring from Metro now is the first Inspector General that the system had. She was there for 10 years. She created the office. And now it's time for that to evolve as well. And you are seeing that evolution at this point.
So not too much to add to that, except that, you know, really you should look at Pat Lavin as the Inspector General for Safety, because that's his primary role. He's not supposed to be out there and managing individuals and making sure they're working safely. He's supposed to manage the safety program and audit the safety program and making sure that other parts of the organization are actually following it and doing the things that's needed to support that program. But if you depend on him to you know, hide in the bushes and wait for somebody to make a mistake, that's not how it works. It's got to be the first-line managers, the second-line managers, the third-line managers. They have to do that work. They have to make sure that those things are detected and addressed. So the IG is going to have some role in that, but the IG will have lots of responsibilities looking at many of the different operational aspects of Metro.
But by the way, the Inspector General that is coming on, Jeff Cherington, I mentioned he was from state, so he was involved in the couple very high-profile cases, the one being the GSA partying out in Las Vegas initiative, the Benghazi initiative over in overseas with that Department of State. So he is not a shrinking violet.
Thank you for coming. The question I have related to the, your initial comments about the budget, knowing that this year was pretty tough in terms of where to find the rest of the money, and as you mentioned, next year is going to be even tighter, are we anticipating making trade-offs next year for what we're going to, the capacity of Metro to do things? Because one of the things is, like, it seems as if we're always just digging ourselves out of a hole and just we're never going to get out of it, but just slightly higher up. So I guess the question is, in terms of prioritizing and asking the various jurisdictions for funding, like, what's the plan to make sure that we can keep up and if not, like, even go ahead of what we need to do to bring the system back to where it needs to be?
I don't know if anybody has an answer to that, to be honest with you. But it, let's put it this way. Cost probably will not go down. We know that there are some big holes that are going to have to be filled as we go forward. A big part of the problem is future funding from the various jurisdictions and the federal government. There's a lot of concern. Is the federal government going to say, hey, this is a local issue, you take care of it? While we get a lot of grants from the federal government that Bob could talk a lot more about, we also get $150 million of PREA funding to pay for capital improvements. That is dependent on being matched by each state, so 50 jurisdiction. So that's $50 million from Virginia, D.C., and Maryland as well. So that's $300 million out of the capital budget right there. If the PREA funding goes away, oh my goodness, what's going to happen there? Because that's even on top of what we're looking at now. So the local jurisdictions and the states are extremely concerned about what's going on in at the federal level. In addition, the source of income that was available in Virginia, Virginia floated some bonds back in 2011 to pay for the six-year capital improvement budget. So they committed to 6 years of funding to spend against priorities for Metro. That included the 7,000 car series, right? That was a huge investment for that, plus a lot of other improvements, and that's buses and so forth. Those bonds, the money from those bonds runs out this year. Well, in the 2018 budget, that money runs out. So there needs to be a new source of funding. Maryland is facing similar issues. But, you know, the money, and that's why it's just not money. It's got to be from operations and governance, too, because there needs to be savings. And I'm not saying cuts. I'm saying savings. Where could those savings be? So when you look at that, I think everything is on the table at this point as far as how we're going to review that. The board will be involved, but so will the General Assemblies from Maryland, Virginia, and the City Council from the district in looking at that. Is the compact going to get open? Is there going to be a new governance structure? A lot of comments around that, but I think there's a lot of momentum to move in that direction. Maybe Bob has a better answer where all this money is going to come from, but I don't know that it can be borne by just the local jurisdictions, just the riders, just the federal government. It's going to have to continue to be a shared sacrifice. But the local jurisdictions, and I testified today at for Fairfax County's budget, it's starting to cut into other services. So, you know, safety services and health and human services, are you going to take the money from there to pay for Metro? And this has become a huge issue for everybody. So it's not there is no easy answer. But.
Yeah, and the discussions we had this year, the hole will get deeper next year, and we've gotten all the low-hanging fruit this year. There might be a few things left, but, you know, it's not really a good model. We do have to have some source of dedicated funding that we can count on, you know, there's been talk about, you know, maybe a 1% sales tax or something like that. That has a lot of potential because that takes us outside of just the people that ride Metro, takes us to the businesses, and it takes us to the people that whose house is worth a hell of a lot more because they're within half a mile of Metro. I mean, there's development around every one of these stations, and that kind of shares the burden. But one of the things we talk about in the Finance Committee is what are we going to do this year so that we don't have the same discussion next year. And, you know, we can lay off people, we can reduce the cost of this, we can decide to not to spend this money this year, spend it next year. But, you know, as Mr. Wiedefeld says, that there's not a lot left to give. You know, we've kind of squeezed what we can out of it, and these discussions are going to be tougher and tougher and tougher until we get a dedicated source of funding. And you know, that's just the way it is, and the sooner people realize that and work on this issue, the better off we're going to be.
Thank you. It does make me reassess upping another year for being on the advisory board, but
fix everything this year.
Yeah, that's right. I understood you to say that you thought that the in order for Metro to advance, it really needed to improve its management systems, and I was wondering if there were specific things that you think will increase accountability and improve management in terms of safety. Specific things that have not yet been done, because you have talked about some things that have been done.
Well, I think you're seeing some of it. You're seeing it with the response, the tough response to the track inspection issue. It really sent a message that the managers are responsible for what goes on there. We run into incident after incident of basic policies and procedures not being followed, you know, basic maintenance practices not being followed and resulting in different issues. And I think what you're seeing is a willingness of Mr. Wiedefeld to hold people responsible for those items. In the past, that didn't seem to be the case. It seemed that policies and procedures were not used whatsoever. It was kind of a shoot from the hip on everything. But those days have to be gone. You can't operate a organization that way. You have to be able to expect that if somebody's doing a track inspection that they're following the procedures. And every once in a while their boss has to go out there, boots on the ground, and see what's going on. And if they never go out there, if they're always in the office or never bother to go see what the people that work for them are doing, you know, that's their responsibility. They're accountable for those people, and they have to move forward. So it'll be a painful process, but the message is getting out there. And one thing you'll hear Pat Lavin talk about in his meetings is efficiency testing, and this is something that we use in the freight railroad realm, where companies are required to go out and do observations of their employees. I'll give you an example. You know, as far as speed is concerned, a road foreman of engines who's responsible for locomotive engineers will, they have radar guns, they'll go out along the right-of-way around a curve somewhere and hide in the bushes and basically see if they're complying with the speed limits. If they're not, they stop the train immediately, and that person is taken and he's sent home for 30 days. And, you know, things like that. That's how you do it. You do efficiency testing, and the railroad's managers are required to do that in order to be in compliance with federal regulations. Pat Lavin is trying to put those types of efficiency testing in place here so that we don't have speeding in tunnels where we have workmen, so that we make sure that we don't leave a platform without a clear signal, that we don't close doors without a clear signal. All of these are policies and procedures that have been in place that if they had just been followed, we would have prevented several accidents.
Okay, I see three more questions. Now that would be a fourth. So we will take the four and then, okay, five with Pat.
I finally figured it out. When you turn your sign upside on the side, that means you have a question.
That works good.
It's just artsy, you know. Okay, so we'll take those five questions, and then in keeping with timing, we will then allow you to go home. So next will be Nick.
Valerie mentioned some of what I wanted to touch on. So to be brief, I guess, is there any internal, like, deadline or benchmarks for this culture change? I mean, it's tough to get people who don't care to do anything. So You mentioned a lot of good things in your response to Valerie, but is there any timeline that we want to see these types of improvements, or we're measuring this metric and we hope to have it fixed by this time, I guess, to a light at the end of the tunnel? Is there anything like that happening?
You're never finished, I hate to tell you, but you're never finished with these improvements. What you want to do is you want to set up metrics. You know, we talked about the employee injuries and passenger injuries. If that's the only thing you're going to measure, you know, you have no idea what's going on the railroad. You can have one accident and everything's askew. What you want to do is you want to set up parameters that you follow. And, you know, I gave you a couple of examples, the number of offloads that you have, the number of times you have to evacuate passengers off a train on the right-of-way, not at a station. You know, you do track the injuries also. You track the number of times the doors open when the train's operating, and you track the number of times the operators run through a red signal, all this stuff. What you're looking for is you're looking for continuous safety improvement. And you keep building, and you keep building. And you'll get to a point where people will put safety first, that they'll automatically follow the policies and procedures. And, you know, you'll have a safe operation, and the statistics will show that. But it's a long journey. And everybody starts at a different place. I have a new rule on system safety for the railroads, and they're going to have to implement it in the next year. It includes the commuter railroads around the country. Everybody starts at a different place, but the whole key is you're never done. It's continuous safety improvement, because as you go along, you know, things will change. You'll get new equipment that needs to be looked at. You'll get new operations. You'll open the line to Dulles. All of these are issues that need to be looked at, analyzed, and say, do we have this under control or not? So you're never done, but you can build it, and you can reach a point where you have good employee satisfaction. That's one of the ways they measure safety culture is actually going and asking the employees how they feel about this, how they feel about that, and you can actually track the scores and do a correlation that you're actually establishing a safety culture. So it's a long process. Don't look for the light at the end of the tunnel for quite a while, but look for incremental improvements every year. That's what we really want to see.
Thank you. My one question bundled. Okay. Thanks for being with us. It's really great to see the Portraits Outside come to life. You guys are members of the board. I'm so really happy that you're here. I guess when I think about SafeTrack and just Metro in its current state, I know reliability and timeliness, all of that, and safety is huge and important, but it seems more necessary but not sufficient to just have that, especially with the fierce competition. Riders have more choices than ever before with Uber, Lyft, bike share, you could walk, you could do all sorts of things. I'm wondering, you mentioned the employee surveys, things like that. How are the unique ideas and insights of employees and riders currently leveraged to make safety, revenue, all of this possible currently, and what can be done to empower them so that we're not just going from top down, but we're really making the most out of every person throughout the entire system to, you know, what incentives are there for them to tap into their creative power or to actually do something? Can we automate some of this? Is some of it nudge-worthy, like creating these nudges to make it such that things are more likely to happen? So what's currently happening and what can happen to make it better from all players?
You don't want to answer that one, do you?
I can take a shot at that.
Why don't you take a shot first?
As Bob just said with the last answer, it's a never-ending situation. But there has to be an environment of trust that employees will be listened to. Over the past year, so Paul Wiedefeld's here pretty much 18 months now, approaching 18 months, right? It's probably 16 to 18 months at this point. Whistleblower complaints are up significantly. Why is that? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? We're actually looking at it as a good thing right now, because employees are willing to come forward because they feel that there's an environment of trust that they are not going to be penalized for doing so. In the past, there have been instances, and hey, by the way, Metro's not alone in that, right? That's why there are whistleblower policies at every organization out there. But there was ramifications if you were to bring something forward. People are feeling better about doing that, and they are being encouraged to do so from management on a top-down basis. So that's that culture of trust. Helps with the culture of accountability, helps with the culture of safety. As far as ideas coming forward, how to improve the system, it may have been a lot about what you were talking about as well, Joseph. Those ideas are out there now. Paul Wiedefeld will sit there and tell you, anyone can shut down a train now. If they see something wrong, they can shut down a train. That was not the case before. You had to go through a couple of layers to get there. So it could be the driver or the engineer. It could be somebody on the platform that is seeing this now. They're empowered to make decisions. And that is, again, building that culture of trust, accountability, safety. And as Bob said, it's never ending when it goes there. And there are ideas. I will tell you, the unions came forth with, I will have to tell you, I have not been able to read the report since I saw it, but they have come forward with a plan for improvements. I'm not saying it's all great. I'm not saying it's all bad. There are going to be good ideas there, and it has to be, there has to be this trusting environment that everybody has ideas that can help within the system. Kind of interesting. Now, most of this was around fare increases, but a lot of it was around routes or changes. Bob can attest to this. So at our for our last board meeting, the board reports that we had to read were 676 pages. I can't read 676 pages, but in trying to do that. But those were all outsiders' comments on that, on how things could be improved. There are good ideas in there. It's weeding through. And by the way, so there was an accounting of all of those suggestions, and they are listened to. And I would never guarantee you that they're all going to be implemented. But if there are ideas there, if you're familiar with the American University UPass, that didn't come from within. That came from without, right? And there are many suggestions like that along the way.
Yeah, the trust is really important. There are some programs here already. There's a confidential close call reporting system, and basically if you had a near accident or something because you did something wrong, you can report on yourself, and you know that can be put in a database, and they can look to see if this is a systemic issue that they may need to, you know, put a new sign in place or a new process or procedure. And the confidential part of it is that you don't get punished for reporting. We have some of this, they call them C3RS programs. We have many of those working on commuter rail properties around the nation. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. The worst thing you can do is ask somebody for advice. How many have a sister-in-law or brother-in-law that does it? They ask you for advice, and then they totally ignore it. I mean, my sister-in-law does that all the time. I know whatever I tell her, she'll do exactly the opposite. So that's really a turnoff. So you have to make sure that you listen. You have to make sure that you address those issues. And with any suggestion system, you have to have that closed loop. You have to go back and say, you know, we can't do this because of that, or that's a good idea, here's what we're going to do, or we don't have enough money for it now, but maybe we'll do it next year. That loop has to be closed to keep people energized and providing those good ideas, because that's really, really where you get the ideas so you can build on.
Paul?
This is more of a follow-up on what you were saying earlier, Bob. I was a little surprised that some of these metrics, and I'm a big metrics person too. I was just a little surprised that some of these incidents weren't being accounted for in the past. For instance, you mentioned offloadings, doors opening. Is it that, and it seems like the only way we knew about it is someone tweeted about it who was offloaded or the doors did open on them. Why wasn't this stuff accounted for in the past? It just seems like something that would be, I'm not going to tell someone how to do their job, obviously, but it seems like that would be something that would be in an incident report right away. I had to offload at Metro Center because there was, the doors wouldn't close, or I don't know, maybe even a smoke incident, something like that.
The information is there. The information is collected. It's not that people don't know about it. They do know about it, but they don't report it. And about two meetings ago, we had the safety summary for the past year, and it basically said this is how many employee injuries we had, and we didn't meet our goal. We almost did, but we didn't meet our goal. And this is how many bus injuries we had. Did we meet our goal? No, we almost met our goal. I mean, there's no way with those numbers you can really measure improvement, and that's what I want to do. I have people that ask me all the time. They say, "Oh, Bob, you're on the board. You know, are they getting safer?" I said, "I think they are, but they're only measuring these two items. I don't know if offloads are up or down, but Pat Lavin does. I don't know if we're having door issues, but Pat Lavin does. We have to change the reports on what's reported so that we have a way to actually measure some progress. And then if we're not getting progress, then maybe we need a different Pat Lavin or a different Mr. Wiedefeld or a different board member. I don't know. But we have to have a way to measure progress and show improvement. That's what everybody needs to see, because everybody's making sacrifices to get this system safe. But we need a way to measure it, and that information is there. It's just not reported back to the board and to the public in a way that they can say, yeah, good job, we're making progress.
Okay. Thank you.
And last but not least, Pat.
Thank you very much. A couple of things. Going back to safety and with respect to people with disabilities, my committee is very interested in working and volunteering for the safety exercises that have come up. But we have had a problem in the past with the waiver situation. And what we're looking to see is whether we can include a limited liability portion to the waiver, so that if you're a person, let's say, in a wheelchair and your wheelchair gets damaged, the cost of repairing that wheelchair doesn't fall all on the disabled person. We haven't made a lot of progress with that in the last two or three months, but I think that's a fairness issue. We'll be bringing that up with the general manager and seeing if we can get some limited liability language into the waiver so that damage to things like wheelchairs can be covered jointly between WMATA, let's say, if it happened during the exercise. The other thing that I've noticed over two or three years that we've been, disability community has been involved in the exercises, is that it feels to me like it's Groundhog Day all over again. Every time we get into a new exercise, it's like the individuals who are involved in this have never worked with disabled people in the past. They're making the same assumptions, or they make the same mistake. We don't see any real learning going on. And one of the things that I think would be extremely useful, and it's a group that has not been utilized as effectively as it can be, but you have disabled people from Maryland, D.C., and Virginia who are subject matter experts who are disabled people that have expertise in emergency preparedness, who are happy, have written training curriculum, have gone and lectured, but feel like they are not being consulted as effectively as they could be. These are the people that know how to deal with people with disabilities. One of the individuals is a personal friend of mine. She was a firefighter, a captain in paramedics. She is now visually blind with a service animal. So she has the expertise, and she has the ability, and she has the knowledge, and she's got the disability knowledge also. But the folks that are available from Maryland, D.C., and Virginia are just not being utilized by the safety exercise people who could learn from their expertise and incorporate it so that you would have one training curriculum. So whether the emergency preparedness people come from Prince George's County, Montgomery County, D.C., or whatever, they're all playing from one single playbook. So I don't know how I can get you their names or whatever, but they need to be utilized to have expertise that is invaluable to working with people with disabilities.
Patrick, I'm appreciative of your comment, and I'm not familiar enough to really answer back, but I will ask a question. Have those suggestions been made to management and the board? Is it a new idea that's coming forth? I don't know that community, and I apologize for that. But is there a way that we can assist in making some recommendations to this? I don't know what Metro's policies are on involving them in the training and
I'm not exactly sure either. I get more of a discussion from them, and they feel they haven't been consulted. Certainly, we have given the names to the WMATI safety people. Perhaps that, and I don't think I don't think that they have engaged these people as much as they could. The folks that I work with from ADAP, I think their influence, to the extent that they can tell other people what to do, might be somewhat limited, so I don't want to throw them under the bus. But I think that encouraging the folks from the safety office who have the ability to coordinate and use the expertise of these people would be the correct people for perhaps board members to lean on and say, have you engaged these people with disabilities? They've got been sharing training material with you for over 2 years. The disability community is seeing the same things coming up over and over again. Why aren't we making progress? We have the ability to make progress, and I'm not seeing it.
Okay.
So we can share that with you.
I'd like to interject, Joy.
Yes.
Patrick, thanks for those comments. I would think that also if you brought this up at the board, we would be in a position to support that. I know that the safety team is drinking from the fire hose right now, and that might be one of the issues. It's not that they don't need that help, but they have lots of things going on at the moment. But I think to get it in front of the board and maybe have a little discussion on it, that might help, you know, get it over the hump and make it a priority for them.
And what would be even nicer is if I can get in touch with the right people and indicate that we've reported this to the board and that we're making progress with these people talking to those people, and we're going to engage and see some results, because it's all about results. Thank you.
Can we depend on that we'll make sure that maybe a comment from back here, too?
Yeah, I'm Ron Bob. I'm the Director of Emergency Management, and Pat has been with us for a long, long time. We do involve Dolores Scott from the District of Columbia, Cecilia Warren from Maryland, that are part of when we put some of these exercises together. But Mr. Sheehan is exactly right. Sometimes you see the same stuff, drill after drill after drill. And even the AAC went up to the COG, passed the Rail Safety Subcommittee, and spoke to them about some of their concerns during these exercises. And when we're doing 4 a year right now, and I'll elaborate on that. But they are involved with Mr. Sheehan, and some of his folks are at these, actively engaged in some of these exercises. But he's exactly right. Some of the same stuff we see over and over again. But they are involved.
Thank you.
Yeah. And with that, we thank you both for your, well, not only the two of you, but the staff in the background who have been providing some insight. Thank you both for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I'd like to thank all of you for volunteering, too. You're doing this out of all the best interest, and we appreciate that. I appreciate that. I don't want to speak for you, Bob.
I appreciate that also. I mean, we're all volunteers here, so we're trying to do the right thing for Washington Metro. You know, my kids ride it, I ride it. our neighbors and friends ride it. I mean, we're trying to do the right thing for the community. It's our transit system. It's ours to be proud of. It's ours to fix. I mean, it's really our transit system, and we need to do the best for it.
I will tell you, so I said I run a Chamber of Commerce. It's the biggest economic development. It's the biggest economic development piece in our total economy. When you look at where our economy is growing, where our community is growing, it's along the metro lines. Hands down, it's, you know, developers want to be there. Businesses want to be there. You look at new companies coming in here. Nestle USA is moving to Arlington. They want it to be at a metro location so their employees can get around. And that, you hear that time and again. So we, whether it's family, whether it's business, we all want, need, and need to help manage to a better system. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
We're working on that.
I think at this point we're going to move on to public comment, given timing, and I don't know if anybody has signed up for public comment in advance.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, are any members of the public who are in the room, would any of them like to speak? If not, that does simplify matters. Okay, we'll check to see if anybody signed up with Joy once she comes back into the room, but in the meantime, everybody hopefully has had a chance to take a look at the meeting minutes, which are included in the agenda packets that are available to you and were provided in advance. So did anybody see any issues with those, anything that needs to be corrected, changed, altered, any other synonyms?
I move we approve the minutes.
I second.
All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye. Aye.
Unanimous approval. Excellent. Sorry?
You didn't ask if there was anybody opposing.
Oh, abstaining. Okay. Was not expecting an abstention. Fair enough. One abstention. Okay. Joy, did anybody sign up in advance for public comment?
Yeah, no public comment on record.
All right. Then we approved the meeting minutes with one abstention. Right. Zero corrections, one abstention. So for the chair's report, I don't have, mostly I'm going to be relying on all the subcommittee chairs to do their reports shortly. Who was at the, was anybody? At the board meeting last week where the decision was made to, the final decision was made about the fairs. Okay. I can tell you that it was kind of lively. I was there. A number of these board meetings are not so lively. This one was. The room was standing room only, and there was a point where no further people were being allowed into the room, which caused a kerfuffle, we'll say, outside. There were many people who wished they could have been let into the room, but to see such a vote that would affect, you know, the 6 million residents of the D.C. metro area. But there was no room for them, and there was no overflow room or no way for those who were not in the room to be aware of what was going on. So there was a little bit of public upset from certain people over that one. Just to let you all know that it was a lively board meeting. If any of you happen to be bored on Thursdays during the board meetings, it sounds like they are getting livelier and livelier as issues at Metro gets more and more interesting. So I will then go ahead and start turning it over to the various committees, and I will start with Pat to see if you have anything that you want to update us on with what the AAC is doing. Thank you. Any questions for Pat? Hearing none, I will go to customer service.
So our big item to report is that thanks to the coordination of Bob and Joy, we were able to take a visit to the customer call center last month, which I think those of you who attended, I think we would all agree was enlightening, seeing kind of not only where they work, but also getting a better understanding of what the policies and procedures are that are in place for the customer call center, seeing some of the data on how they've improved responses, not only via social media, but on the call center, and kind of talking through what some of their challenges are, especially considering budget and personnel cuts. I'm happy to let anyone else who attended chime in on that. Bob's going to be sharing with us kind of a summary write-up on that.
I thought one of the best things that came from the visit was learning that how you get an immediate answer from WMATA is Twitter.
Right.
So now you guys have all the secret. Use Twitter. You'll get an answer.
But, I have to say, speaking just for myself, I feel a greater degree of confidence in Metro's customer responsiveness after kind of interacting with that staff. I don't know if anyone else shares that sentiment.
And it's a new staff that's
right. They have a new director of that center. Yeah.
I did think it was also telling because I have worked in a call center environment, and it's very easy to, you know, let a call go because, you know, you have to finish something up. But that they had very prominently displayed the number of calls waiting and how long they had been waiting, and they said that after a certain point, supervisors will get on and handle calls as well. So it kind of sounds like a can-do environment. We don't want people waiting too long. So I did think that was good.
Also, you would be amazed to see the lost and found. Yeah. That was outrageous.
I don't know how some people managed to forget that they brought some of those things with them.
This stroller was the one that you forget you had. That was a pathetic leg.
So beyond that, can I comment? The customer service committee has kind of refined our priorities for this year's work plan, and you know, narrowed down our list of things to focus on. And that will include trying to pull together a recommendation for a back to good like plan for customer service, exploring the possibility of a volunteer secret shopper / rider program. We'll continue to work on a recommendation for communicating snow removal between WMATA and local jurisdictions. For stations, specifically bus stations, bus stops, and Deb will be working on some customer service recommendations for non-upwardly mobile riders. So our next steps will be, you know, collecting our informational requests and for all of those items, trying to compile them and consolidate them so that we can funnel them through Joy and identify the appropriate people to get information where necessary. And hammering out the action steps on those items.
I'm sorry. Will you all do a consolidated work plan, or should I look for work plans from each individual committee? You remember, I think when Barbara.
Oh yeah.
You know, it was this massive thing.
Right.
So it sounds like maybe each committee will just have their work plan, which is fine.
Question for Catherine.
Because I take that work plan and then I share that with Ben, and so she too has been asking about the work plan, and I told her that it's coming, so I'm just trying to understand the formula.
Right, right.
I can do whatever works best for WMATA staff. And I know that in previous years the committees have not been the strongest ever. I think this year's committees are stronger than they often have been, so I am much more confident in letting committees lead this. But if it would be more convenient to have one central depository for a lot of this, that can happen.
So I think it might be helpful if you can pull the document that Barbara put together last year and then, yep. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to just comment again a little on our visit, some of the things that I'm supposed to be summarizing, right? But just for those who weren't there. A couple of things that came up, and I think there was one case was some receptiveness, another one was not so receptive. But I had suggested that on their website that they post frequently asked questions about problems with WMATA. You know, might address some questions before people made the calls. And they seem to be quite receptive to that.
Based on actually frequently asked questions at the call center.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's still some ambiguity, as far as I'm concerned, about how people's complaints. You know, they categorize things. Most of the calls they get are, you know, the train didn't arrive in time, or what's the best way to get from point A to point B. Overwhelmingly, those are the most frequent calls, emails, et cetera. Then there's the category of complaints. There's a little bit of ambiguity about how a complaint is resolved. I call up, I'm unhappy. Who does the, you know, the customer, at this point, it seems to me, at least this is my impression, the customer service people have the authority to close the complaint, whether the complainant is happy or unhappy with the resolution. There's also a problem, I think, a little bit of a problem in follow-up. you have to request, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have to request a follow-up to your complaint to get one. Otherwise, you don't get a follow-up. Well, you know.
So perhaps what would be helpful in your summary is like listing outstanding questions that we may want to follow up on.
Yeah. And the only other thing I have to point out is this lost and found, picking up on Will's comment about lost and found. You know, why is the lost and found in Prince George's Plaza? Why isn't it not in Metro Center or Gallery Place or here? Because, you know, it's like...
Didn't they say they were exploring moving it to Metro Center?
Yeah, well, they explained it in a couple of years, maybe. But, I mean, it just, you know, it sort of begs the question, you know. This is sometimes my frustration with Metro Go is, you know, why aren't they training the people in safety? Why aren't they training the safety people in safety, you know? Why are they not training the customer service people in customer service? You know, why is the lost and found in a spot that a lot of people would just go, the hell with it.
Why does it even have to be in a central location? Why can't it stay in the respective stations? That way, you know, you don't have to travel to some unknown place. You can just go back to the place where you were and ask for my thing.
I guess the answer to that is you get on the red line in Shady Grove and you get off at West Falls Church and all of a sudden you get off, you've lost your wallet. Well, you know, you've lost your wallet. You've been on two different lines, a dozen stations, you know. Anyway,
and administratively speaking, they need to all this stuff.
It was a good meeting, and I think that in particular I was impressed with the new guy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. I think he's, you know, as the board members here indicated, there's at least at the top levels, they're replacing some people, and I thought this guy was good. The silos, and I'll summarize this, the silos still remain in Metro. I think it is one of the, I don't know if you pick this up and on the safety issue, but there are tremendous silos, and that's one of the problems. And I think it's a smaller silo in customer service because it's not as important as safety, but there's still, you know, the people who are running the customer service center can't resolve customer service complaints that have to do with something else. So that's all.
Richard, did you have a question, or did I misinterpret a twitch earlier? Okay.
All right, I was saying that, is there a way that, you know, when you finish a report that summarizes your visit, that this can be something that can be public facing? Just to know that, for the public to know that customer service, what they do, what their mission is, you know, the improvements they've been made, that may be something that could really at least try to get some positive vibe from the riders on Metro. And I think that's important because I didn't want to ask them, like, that the perception of Metro to the riding public definitely, I think, needs to be improved because I think that's going to affect issues like should there be a ballot to put a 1% tax increase. People, they don't think positively about Metro, they're going to be hesitant, you know. So something like that where we as a RAC can help if we're seeing these improvements, put that on the public so then there's actual so people don't know what's going on.
Yes. We can definitely make that public. We've made public the previous comments that we've had for the budget committee, et cetera, so sure. Certainly a summary of a visit that we had.
We also, when we were there, received like a two-pager that kind of summarized a lot of the functions and, you know, and accompanied that with data. So it might be helpful to see if we can get that in electronic form that we can share.
Yeah, because he said that that was an internal document.
I mean, I took it home, but I don't know where it is.
Yeah.
was an awfully snazzy report for just internal documentation. Dexter?
Yeah, I had a question for Bob. Regarding the FAQs online, do you think they might be receptive to having kind of like an automated version of FAQs? Because everyone's not going to go online. I mean, I don't know if you mentioned that to them, but kind of like having an automated, like when you call press 2 for frequently asked questions. I mean,
I didn't get into that specificity, but it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable question.
Yeah.
We can certainly follow up with that. I know he did note that they were in the process of revamping their call menu system for a number of reasons.
In general, I hope we can call, you know, we can follow up with them on a number of things. If he said he was interested in the FAQ, I'd like to get back in contact with
them. Don't have apps on their smartphones.
Yeah.
So do we have a timeline for following up with them on some of these things, either for producing this report or for following up on the FAQs or whatever else we've got, the potential move of the lost and found, whatever it may be?
Well, we can discuss it at the committee meeting, but whatever is, you know, I'd like after maybe two months after our meeting with them, call them, send the director an email and say, we raised a half a dozen things, what's going on?
I think that's a generous timeline, yeah.
I would agree. We're already a month out almost, so.
Yeah. Well,
so end of this month?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Any other customer service questions or comments?
Follow up. When that report gets out, in addition to making it public, just definitely should think about who are some targeted people, groups, that we should send out the report to show that there is this customer service. For example, reporters at the transportation reporters at the Washington Post, people who are moderators for some of these Twitters that are very much against Metro and our clients. Let's show them that there's actually progress, and that can make a change. So that's something just to consider.
Oh, you're turning your mic off?
I guess we'll have to, I think that's something we'll have to discuss because and we do have some restrictions as to, you know, with regard to press interaction. But because that almost like gets us into the realm of advocacy, it seems to me. Outside of like making recommendations to the board and staff for improving the agency. But I mean, I do like the idea of publicizing what we're finding, whether it's good or bad.
I think as long as we don't actively lean one direction in saying it. If we write up a summary and have it posted online as RAC activities, and then just let a couple people know, hey, this link's here. We don't have to say, have to focus on or call out any particular things that we see as issues, but if we have a summary that is pretty factual and not particularly partisan, then I think that would... activities. All right, with that, I will play the role of CITSA for this evening and talk about budget briefly. CITSA is currently on a plane, I believe, so unable to join us now. And a couple of updates on that. The Budget Committee wrote a brief statement to the board saying thanks, effectively, thanks for listening as much as they could. Certainly they can't listen to everything we have to say. But we did, I did read that at the board meeting on March 23rd, the meeting where they did do end up with the vote to decide on the fares and the budgets, and that was, the vote itself was somewhat anticlimactic. There was no discussion, and it passed unanimously, so all of the work, all the discussion had actually happened in committee in advance. So at the next meeting, the intention is to nail down the work plan for the budget committee for the rest of the year, given that the budget happens toward the beginning of the year. That leaves a lot of year left so you can do other things. So they will, among other things, be brainstorming ideas for alternative metro funding sources. And I am specifically calling out Dexter, Paul, and or Joe to see if you have anything to add to what CISA has given me to say. Okay. Then I will turn to Joe for P3.
Gotcha. And sorry, it's safety. Are they doing? Are you guys going also, or maybe later? Okay, sorry. We were gonna like take up not too much time. Okay.
Right. So you don't get the remaining 30 minutes.
So.
I know. Hence the.
Okay. Gotcha. We will. Okay. So basically, we created a PowerPoint of just things that we wanted to do, but we're committed to at least showing at least one of the new ideas every time we meet, so a new initiative that we want to showcase and to include in an idea book that will be on a PowerPoint format so that the board and other people can see it immediately. But the signature initiative for this month was spearheaded by Paul, and it was the GGW standing column for RAC members. Any member who wishes to write and contribute to this column can do so. And I think, Paul, you spoke more with their editorial staff and could speak more to that.
I did. And this is all very tentative. It's something I've talked to Joy about months ago when I was interviewing to be here. And Greater Washington, I don't know if people are familiar with them, but they are a blog that talks a lot about land use and transportation issues, housing issues in the area. And obviously, they're coming from a place of having better service, better rail service, better bus service, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, the guy that started GGW used to be on the RAC years ago. I've talked to their managing editor, they seem interested in having us contribute. I was thinking, like I said, this is very tentative, and we could talk about this for a little bit if you'd like, that one member of the RAC, if that member is interested, would write a 500 words perhaps on whatever they're doing, whatever the if it's a committee chair, if it's like safety. I know Colin was talking about customer service, something like along those lines. For instance, great example would be the visit to the customer service center, and just talk about that. And also the person would be hopefully available to answer any comments that GGW readers would have, and hopefully get a good plug for the RAC, because obviously we need to We need to improve that 70-person Facebook likes. Exactly. We need more. We need more likes.
More
we need more likes, Joe. So, like I said, I wanted to. They seem receptive, and obviously, it's a contribution to a blog. So, and they have an editorial staff. So, there will be an editorial process involved. I don't know how rigorous it would be, but I don't know if it would just be grammatical, but like grammatical edits. But I think they're reasonable, and. I think it's a good place to start to get some visibility and get our names out there.
Was there like a specific ask that they have from us in terms of what we're writing to them? Kind of like, are they looking for like specific issues that we have that they want to use to pressure the board to do X, Y, Z, or is it just? I guess I'm trying to figure out what they were thinking.
I asked if there was like any kind of like, are there any subject areas you want us to get into, or subject areas conversely that they don't want us to get into?
Right.
I didn't get anything that said, except for like the obvious, don't talk about this or that, but it's more, I don't think it was, I think it was pretty, it's pretty open-ended as to what, and also, I was, from our point of view, and I forgot to mention this, that we, as the RAC, should probably agree that we're going to talk, that whoever's writing is going to write on such and such a matter so that they don't go too far off. But I don't, I've, out of everyone I've met here, I don't think that would be a real issue at all.
Yeah, and I know we're all representatives of the RAC. We may not speak for the full RAC, but I would hope that through this platform that anyone who does choose to participate, we could send our drafts to this full body, yeah, and we could get feedback, edits, so that we have the blessing of the RAC to actually do this. And then once they provide their editorial edits, we could get that back up also and give our blessing again, and then it'll be published. We don't want this to take forever to just do like one 500-word article, but at the same time, we want to put safeguards in place so that we're not, you know, doing anything crazy. I don't think this should be anything that is mountain moving, but I do think that we should be out there. I think writers should know that we exist and that we're there for them. So to the extent that we can make this happen, I think it will be one push towards the right direction to getting ourselves interacting with writers directly.
Right, I think this is a great idea. I just didn't want them to misconstrue anything that we would say and have a big headline, RAC says F you to Metro Board, and you know, people read headlines, they don't actually read the content. So I just making sure that was.
Yeah.
That's an interesting article title, Dexter. I think you should write that for next time.
Clarence?
One of the ideas in terms of talking about our initiatives is, you know, I'm always surprised, like, we're in this day and age when, like, public meetings aren't live streamed. And I think that's a great way of just opening us up. I know we're working on our Twitter component, but it'd be interesting if, and when our meeting starts, if we could just like post on Twitter and like live streaming and have people join in.
That was on our idea.
Oh, perfect. Especially like we have our meetings with, I think Paul's probably coming up soon. I know there's one way in which like people would be very much interested because maybe they'd not be able to come down here or come for all of it. But if we are able to do that, and whether or not we have to go through official Metro channels or, you know, someone just bring a camera, we put it on the TV or something.
I'm wondering, can we do like a soft poll? Like, what do you guys think of that? Can we actually implement something like that? Would you guys feel comfortable doing that? Or maybe like once a quarter or during these big, you know, Paul Wiedenfeld comes, that sort of thing. How many of you guys would be okay with that?
We're talking about a different subject.
I know, and then we'll get back, but like because that topic was brought up.
Or on GG.
On Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah. Would you guys be okay? Who wouldn't be okay with that?
No
joke. Okay.
Well, let me say that I think that there are meetings themselves frequently are not very interesting to just observe. And the technical difficulties of making this happen, you know, I've been in enough Skype meetings to know that, you know, sometimes you get the corner of the room rather than the person who's looking. So I think that technical difficulties can overcome the message that we're trying to put in. So if we were to do something like this, I think we need to make sure that we're at least presenting the basic information and not distracting folks by poor quality.
I think we should also like inform our guests too if we're going to do a live stream and not just stream them live.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so we'll consider that as
a matter
for the future, and we'll talk about that in our PPP. But let's, if it's okay to come, come back to this. Do you guys for next steps? Can we vote on something like this when we draft the proposal? Or Lorraine first.
Regarding the submitting stuff to groups like GGW, previous experience again, since I'm the one that has been here before, the longest, I just want to let you know that the way we could submit something that is informational, but it cannot be like an op-ed type thing, and you know, an opinion, because remember that we are appointed by the board and we report to the board.
Of course.
We can give them informational stuff, and also know that when you submit articles to GGW or Washington Post or whoever, they have the final editorial decisions. It's not, they will not edit, you know, they, when they edit it, they don't submit it back to us and they, what do you think about it? We send it to them and then they will edit according to however space they have or however, you know, they make the final edits. They don't send it back to anybody. And this is my experience having worked for governors, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
When you submit an op-ed piece or whatever, type, you know, an article to any kind of publication, they have the final editorial decisions, okay? So they, whatever changes that, you know, we don't get to vote back and say, oh, I like the changes, or no, I, you cannot change this.
I was going to say something, but I don't know.
So that is something that has to be understood from the beginning.
And of course, it'll have to be run through our own.
Right. And I was just going to say that nothing would be submitted. Everything that would be submitted would fall within the RAC and the board's guidelines for our media submissions, of course. And they would send... I believe one of the things that we asked for was having the final at least sent back to us. And remember, this isn't the Washington Post. This is this isn't the New York Times. This is GGW. I mean,
and David is very friendly, you know.
Exactly, that's one of the reasons why starting from this is a great spot, because we know that they want to improve transportation. We want to improve transportation. We're all coming from the same place, so I don't imagine like. An unscrupulous editor saying a whole bunch of putting a whole bunch of words in our mouth. I doubt that would happen. If I thought that was going to happen, I would not approach these people.
Richard?
I was just going to suggest also looking at the Coalition for Smarter Growth. They're based in Northern Virginia, but they have also spoken a lot about metro issues, specifically within the I-66 area. I think if you look to expand this initiative, that's another group you should look at.
What was the coalition?
Coalition for Smarter Growth.
Smarter Growth. Okay, I heard of
that. Have you talked to any of them, or do you know them, or do you, like, on a personal, maybe we could work with them, too, on?
Yeah, well, I have to, unfortunately, not on a personal level.
I have participated in some of their events before in Arlington. So
I know them.
You know them? Great. We could, there's no reason why we should be exclusive to one particular group. We can definitely approach others and say, hey, I mean, it's more that if does someone want to be the first person to write something? I mean, if you're interested, definitely, you have my email address, you have Joe's email address, let us know, and we could go from there on what a submission would be. Just give us, like, an idea, like, hey, I'd like to write about the awesome customer service trip to the customer service center we saw, or I'd like to write about you know, safety or whatnot. I mean, as long as it fits within the guidelines of submissions and media relations, I think that would be. I'm pretty open about it. I really am. I'm not gonna. And so is GGW.
And this isn't like a holy pulpit kind of thing. We're gonna definitely. We will work with WMATA, with anyone who we need to, in order to, you know, make sure that this puts the best front forward and not best foot forward, I guess, and not just be out there. And we're hoping to do it maybe quarterly or something that's, you know, a more polished beginning, and then start small on the scale eventually. And then maybe we could just recycle those posts in different platforms. But, you know, start small, make sure we get it right so that we could build trust, and then make sure that we could ramp up in the future when we have more capacity, hopefully. But really be intentional about these first few pieces.
Will?
Quickly, Joe, this is for basically for you and everybody. You asked about, you know, whether everybody would be comfortable with the live streaming. Technically, we're already on public display because of the fact that sometimes when Mr. Wheatfield comes in and speaks, there's a camera person in here. whether we, you know, realize it or not. So it won't really make a difference unless you've committed some crime recently and you're on the lamp. And you don't want to be seen. But no, our faces are generally already out there, regardless of, you know, whether or not we like it or not. If we're in this room, sometimes the camera is rolling, so.
That's a good point.
Colin?
So I guess the question that I have is sort of what is the goal we would be trying to accomplish with the op-eds? I mean, would it be sort of highlighting, our recommendations?
There are a lot of different ways it's multifaceted in that sense. It's not one singular goal, but the main thrust really would be to be out there so that people know that we're here. It's really important that they can begin to engage with us in some way, that we have some direct conduit to the writers, that we can point them to various platforms that we're on, whether it be this meeting right here or our committee meetings. You know, the fact that we don't really have too many public people making comments and coming to this body, I think that can, I don't know, I think we have to be more out and about versus just, and to communicate our priorities and initiatives and how they align with WMATA, and to let people know where, like, how we represent them. Because they may not know. They can visit our website, but I don't think that's a full description of everything we're doing. It's a lot of technical documents that we're working on within committees. But to the extent that we can be more legitimate in that sense of being, you know, on various platforms so that we can engage directly with writers, I don't think that's something that can hurt. Obviously, there are risks involved with any exposure, but I think with, you know, mitigation, I think we can make calculated smart risks that will ensure that we make the right entrances into various, and also tapping into new, you know, engaging new stakeholders that may not engage otherwise.
I don't disagree with the need for
it's fine
publicizing
if
Iraq and, yeah, and what we do. I guess my concern is that we may encounter a number of hurdles in attempting to do something like this, as opposed to reaching out to outlets like GG Wash and saying, hey, you know, in our meeting this week, in our upcoming meeting this week, we're going to be discussing this issue, and we think it's something that you and your readers will be interested in. Why don't you come by and report on it?
I think that's valuable, too, but because it's not like a stat, like there's not a regular column that people can expect. It's kind of good for us, too, that the writers can hold us accountable. Like, are we really representing them, or are we, you know, like, what are we doing? You know, can we make it such that there is a standing column, like, maybe once a quarter, where they can expect us to share what we're doing? Maybe they don't have the time to come to these meetings or to read our documents in all these different places. I think it's valuable to meet them where they might be. Like, they might already be on GGW. So definitely, I do hear what you're saying, and I think that's valuable. I think they should be here to the extent that they want to be here. Hear what you have to say and what writers have to say in general. But, yeah, I think this is...
That's why I was saying that if it's something informational,
definitely,
you know, that I don't see any problem with that,
yeah,
with doing that.
Definitely.
But if it's something... you know, recommendations or anything like that is something that we have to report to the board. And
everything's
going to
go through
that,
this body,
yeah,
and the board, too. So
that's why it just, like he was saying, I have an issue on exactly what it is. That's why, you know.
I have a question. I'm sorry, Joe.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. Maybe we could talk offline about this. Maybe go, you know, talk about more detail. Is there an issue, I don't want to use the A word, I don't want to say advocacy, but if there are initiatives that, your work plan, for example, that people are that people care about, I think that should be communicated to the public. And that is part of our mission as Iraq, to not just be kind of squirreled away in a basement on the first Wednesday of every month, that these, that these sort of things that we're working on are very important to the people, and I can't imagine in a metropolitan area of with a ridership area of 4.5 million people that these are the only people that care about transportation. And just because and that we're the only people that will have very good ideas. Now, I think part of our mission, as I said before, is engaging the public. Maybe, there's a difference between advocacy and bad-mouthing the board or whatever whatever the board is trying to do. There's a huge difference between the two. And being out there is, the information's online. The information anyone can find. Anyone can know to come here, but we're not giving them a reason to come here. That's the difference. And by this, I think you're giving them a reason to get involved. Catherine has a point.
Just that I strongly agree with that. Everything you said except about being in a basement.
It's true. It's a concrete.
I think we struggle to get people. We struggle with turnover. The RAC is stronger now than it has been in quite some time, but it still could be stronger. I mean, do people outside of this room tend to know that we exist, that we operate, or... I mean, there's a reason we tend not to get a lot of public comments at these things. People don't know to come. When people do come, it tends to be blue line issues, which is a continual problem, but that's the only thing we tend to hear about from the public, despite all the things that are going on out there. And I do think it is, we were appointed not only to sit around and talk amongst ourselves at this table in this room and hope, send some stuff to the board and hope that occasionally the board responds positively or responds at all. Sometimes responding at all is exciting. But we were appointed to represent all of the riders and all of the potential riders of the system, and not just Metro, but also the bus system. And that's a lot of people. And I think that if we are too shy about publicizing that we exist and what it is that we do and what we think the board should be doing, I think that would be doing a disservice to the entire Metro region and also to Metro. I know there have been some issues in the past about exactly how far we can go with what it is that we say, given that we are sort of representatives of WMATA. Not exactly. We are appointed by WMATA, but we are riders. We are the Riders Advisory Council. I know there have been those issues in the past. I also would point out that, as was pointed out today, we have an entirely new set of leadership at WMATA. In the last year and two years anyway. Certainly there are some people who are still around and were part of any decisions that were made previously, but the new administration at WMATA, the staff, plus the board, are all proving to be a lot more engaging and a lot more engaged than many previous leadership teams have been. So I think there will be more support now for anything we try to do than there would have necessarily been in the past. So I don't know that we should necessarily worry about how we were received in the past. Yeah. We're not the same group of people. They're not the same group of people. And each one of us represents tens of thousands of potential riders. And if we sit in this room and don't try to publicize what it is that we're talking about, that's sad.
I would only add to, in terms of legitimacy, first of all, great speech, Catherine.
That was awesome.
Wow.
Sorry, good job, Madam President.
I agree with that completely. But in terms of legitimacy, I think we, in terms of using this column, we would have to promote whatever achievement we have made, whether it be small or big, whether it's like getting FAQs automated or getting them to not cut up one bus. I think we have to use that column to just promote, because, I mean, I agree with you. If people don't think we're worth anything or if we're effective, they're not going to come and testify. Why would they testify to a body that's not effective? So we just have to start showing that we are effective. And I think that we are. And I think that, I was in Iraq a couple years ago, and I told Catherine and some other leaders that this is the strongest RAC I've ever seen. So, I mean, I think we just have to start promoting that, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, this column, and then I think that we'll start to get more people interested in the RAC. So.
Nick?
And I was capturing your interest specifically regarding writing for publications, and then I even have a question here where I will ask, you know, what type of outreach activities are allowed, right? Like maybe you just need some clarity around parameters, and so that you guys can begin
And it's also not just...
That way we can kind of understand back to what these real limitations are and how we set back.
What?
Okay.
Well, no.
That's a good Colin, that's a good mantra to live your life by. I agree with that. I follow that every... Colin, I follow that every day.
Two things. So who are you going to ask?
Well, first of all, you know, I'm going to talk to my manager. You know, she kind of partners with me on this.
Yeah.
I'll come back from there. And then now, you know, you guys always have access to the board via your, you know, communications. So I will go to her. I'll let you know her response. And, you know, you go from there.
Yeah. I just had one suggestion, sort of between advocacy and information sharing. Is there any, most organizations, boards, they put out a press release for every meeting. Yeah. Even if it's, you know, and they have a long list of press organizations, they send that out, you know, and I don't, is there any reason why we wouldn't want to, you know, get WMATA's press list and say, we're meeting on the fifth of April, and here's our agenda, and maybe we could even, I mean, I just think of some of the things we talked about today, Sawyer safety stuff, great stuff, you know, and you know, these two board members, I think particularly, you know, Lobby, who's, you know, the safety guy for the Federal Railroad Administration.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know, if some people were here, they'd be really interested. I mean, somebody might be interested in this stuff, or even some of our... Even our visit to the customer service thing. I mean, there's some questions about, like, it raises some questions. I think you could do it in a way that doesn't sound like you're advocating or challenging or things like that. You're just going, hey, this is an open public meeting. We're a public board. You know, why the hell don't we inform the media every time we meet? Let them know what we're going to talk about.
What sounds like a good potential first article would then be discussing the customer service trip that we made. It sounds like a lot of people are saying, informationally, this is what we did, this is what we heard, that sounds promising, and that will all start with a report from you.
And Lynn will be joining the group next month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know how fast we want to make things happen in the next 3 weeks or so, but this may be part of the questionnaire, you know, some of these questions to get some clarity, if you will, because, again, that's I'm on it, so I mean, she runs the communications department, so she would be the person that would address these types of concerns. So, you know, I just implore you to, you know, you can send it to me, and we can, like I said, we'll get the questionnaire. Maybe she can answer some of that early on, and you know, if not, you'll definitely have her here at that next meeting.
Well, timing-wise, it sounds to me like it would be ideal if we could get an article up prior to the next meeting. And at the end of it, say, and come to the next RAC meeting if you have any further questions, because Lynn Bowersox will be there.
We could make that happen if you guys, and circulate a draft.
You wanted to talk to your people first to make sure that if there's any framework.
Most definitely we would want to run, because I, you know, the media and that is just a very slippery slope. So we just always want to make sure that what we're saying is in line with what WMATA wants to be represented. You know, I'll say that, you know, and so I can understand that from a branding perspective. So let's go ahead and make the draft, and then let's share it with the media relations just to make sure they don't scope. And another thing is that media relations, they understand that media pool. They know the ABC folks. They know all these folks. So they have a way of understanding how things may be picked up, how things may be misconstrued. And so we kind of want that expertise, because I know we don't want to put anything out there that would, you know, malign Metro and kind of, you know, have us sort of marginalized from getting information or whatever it is, right? Because they think, this is going to work.
Joy, you were saying do the draft first, or I thought we were going to hear from your people to make sure what the framework was, and then we work
parallel.
I would like to understand what it is that you would be writing about, and I think that maybe that would be a stronger conversation for me.
So first of all, I could say ideas of what, like, anyone could say, like, ideas of what we want to talk about. I mean, I didn't want to come in here and say, we should write about this, because I wanted kind of the sky to be the limit. Like, I want people to write about anything that anything that's Metro WMATA related as
I know
long as
WMATA,
it helps.
They were planning to be here, but they were there was a lot of things on the agenda, chock full, and so they perhaps postponed it for May to be here. But I know it's Bicycle Month that time, and I know it's Earth Month this month. It's Earth Month every month. But if maybe we could go and talk about how we're partnering with WMATA or other organizations to make our sustainability initiative, or to talk about what we're doing with bicyclists, like just the initiatives that we're partnering with them for that month, or I mean building our capacity to I know we fear that this can be used as against WMATA, but I think what Paul Wiedefeld shared with us in the beginning of this year about how can we build advocacy within riders to support some things that should be supported, like dedicated funding streams or more money for WMATA and more accountability with that. I think it's important that this happens. I think that customer service, our visit to that center could be another thing. You guys could offer a lot of topics and issues.
It seems to me that the first iteration of this probably ought to be primarily an overview of the RAC, who we are, what we're charged with doing, and then maybe provide a couple of examples of what we've been up to, that customer service center visit being an example, and then maybe wrap it up with a request for input from riders for, what their primary concerns are and what they hope to see us work on in the future.
And that links into another idea that was, but I'll keep it short, in terms of having the ideas there, like having a form where they could send us ideas directly. We have comments already, but we could just maybe just link that up.
Sounds like an excellent future plan that we can discuss at a future
later.
Meeting.
Okay, all right.
So, let's email about it later.
Okay.
We'll email about it later.
Okay. And in the meantime, I would suggest getting a dress started. I think trying to do all this in sequence will just slow us down like crazy if we have to wait and then wait and then wait. Parallel.
Definitely highlighting some of the things that we already, that came out of the RAC, like 15 minutes or things like that.
All right. So Sawyer, I know we said that the PPP was not going to get all 30 minutes. So how quickly can you speak?
And unfortunately, it's not going to be super concise, obviously, given what transpired earlier, but I'll do my best to keep it brief. At the last committee meeting, we did review the WMATA safety annual report for the last calendar year. So now they have published both safety report and security report. It was referenced by me in kind of the opening remarks and by both board members. So take a look at that. Let's see, we obviously spent time drafting the questions that you all probably received. If not, there's some by the door. This was mostly to kind of refine what we're looking at our work plan, some unanswered questions that we had or couldn't find the answers immediately to online or otherwise. Reviewing the questions, I think there might be a little bit more back and forth with the staff to get more clarification on some of these points. One in particular that I did want to highlight just for you all for reading it is related to number 5, current and planned efforts to address the increase in sexual and violent assaults in the system. And the answer kind of makes it sound like it went down, but the part 1 crime that they're actually referencing here is not those violent assaults. Part 1 crime is more of the pettier crime. So I just wanted to highlight that as it kind of reads like it was actually a decrease, but there was actually a 31% increase in aggravated and sexual assaults on the metro over the last year. So I want to point that out to you as this is kind of misleading and kind of, I mean, it's not misleading. I mean, it's factual what they say, but it's not directly related to the question. So I did want to point that one out. So I think for the next steps, at least for this, is we'll review it as a committee, see where there are more items which we would like to request more information for, and then that'll allow us to refine our work plan going forward. Once it's refined and once we can get more answers, we've been discussing drafting a letter to the WMATA board and staff regarding kind of our position and recommendations on these pieces. It seemed to be a pretty effective route with the budget letter, and so this letter could be more of an opening up the door as well. Here's our interests, here's what we've identified, and laying it out there, because we, to my knowledge, have not really been approached on safety and security matters that often. So that'll be coming. I'll hopefully get a draft together, and we'll discuss it in committee and then bring it to the full RAC when it's ready. I guess the final RACtivity.
That's not becoming a word.
Is actually the upcoming exercise. So Pat mentioned it earlier. There will be an activity, and Joy sent out the link for it. I can also send it out if you need that extra reminder. But on April 23rd is the most recent and upcoming safety exercise, and it will be taking place in Navy Yard. Yes, Navy Yard in the tunnel. It's a very early morning. We'll get done around noon, but please do sign up via the link that Joy sent out if you are at all interested. I'll be there. I'm sure there'll be some others. So please join that as your action item after this meeting.
So there is an activity plan. This number 3 is wrong.
It's not necessarily wrong. These are safety trainings. We had heard that there was a stock kind of safety training that staff puts forward to different groups if requested. So that's the impetus behind that question, but you can see, they said there were none. So we need to tease into some of these a little bit before we can make some recommendations. But this isn't a safety training for riders, and I want to be clear about that. I mean, you would actually be a volunteer on the rail car that gets stuck in the tunnel, and you would be there to help train first responders.
And you need to get that part, and they give you a card, and they say, you're severely injured, like you're unconscious and
carry
out.
Yeah. Okay. So there is a level of interaction there, but they've been very clear that the purpose behind these exercises is not customer facing, but first responder facing.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yes. So these are volunteers to be bodies.
So you're acting.
You're acting. Yeah. You're acting. Cool. So please sign up for that if you're interested. If you have any questions about it after you look at the link, let me know. I was involved in the most recent planning call, which I was very impressed by the efficiency at which that call happened. But everyone seems to be on the right page. So if you do have any questions, let me know. If you have any questions reading this document, also happy to answer those as I have some comments as well. So I think that's it.
I just have one comment on exercise. I've been to one of them before. And it's sort of slow motion.
If there was a real
problem, you sure as hell want them moving about 100 times faster than they move. I don't know how to address that, but it's just an observation that takes away from sort of the real life moment. I mean, of what's happening. You know.
And I suspected as much. Especially the first question on the sheet is directly related to the exercises and how they're operationalized, going back to some comments made earlier about how that information might not be shared. So it'd be really great to have some visual on it to see kind of what's happening and maybe some of the outcomes from that as well. So thank you.
Yes, Will?
Comment. The senior member that's been on the most exercises, unfortunately I won't make this one because I have a race that morning, but I will say that over the years, and I know, you know, Patrick's been on probably, you know, most of them, if not all of them himself, but most of the exercises, yes, they have been slow, but one thing that I have noticed is that a lot of the first responders that come to these events, they've never been in part of one of the exercises before, so it kind of has to be slow on that regard. I mean, I was thinking the same thing as Bob did, but then as I've been on different, you know, exercises, I realized some of these are new cadets that are coming into the police department. There's new firefighters from different jurisdictions that've never done this before, so they kind of have to run it slow. But I can also say that from the WMATA staff standpoint, they have been more reactive because we have been making our own opinions known. And so with the last exercise, there was definitely a little bit of stepping up in their game. So yes, there's still room for improvement, but they're slowly starting to get, you know, the responses, you know, through their skull, and they understand, so.
Yeah, that's great, and I think for those that are participating, I think it would be useful to write up a quick debrief as well and share that with at least the direct staff that I've been working with on the exercise, and if warranted, hire, but just to show that we are participating and we're being also reflective and providing input and just what we observed as well.
Well, at the end of each exercise, they actually have everyone fill out an information form with questions and suggestions. So, but I mean, are you referring to the RAC members, you know, bring something back to the RAC as far as some type of diatribe on their experience?
Perhaps not a diatribe, but it does seem that this would potentially be another source for P3 if we are publishing things. I bet most people don't even know the safety operations exist. The vast majority of the public has no clue. So just letting them know.
And there's more forthcoming. There's at least two.
Yeah, they're quarterly, so if we alert them about this April 1, then they can potentially be involved in future ones. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Okay. A second.
Is there an objection to adjourning? Hearing none.
I hear it. Wait. I do. Nick's been had to make a comment. He didn't get his comment did not get addressed. I feel like it's appropriate that what he had to say. Sorry, I know, but he had his thing up. We had the big picture conversation. I feel like it's appropriate if you want to say what you want to say.
I appreciate that. I was going to table my discussion so Sawyer could get on to her report. So I'll table it until next time if the topic comes up again. Thank you, though. In all honesty, I think if I bring it up, it's going to cause us to hear another 15 minutes, so I'll just table if it comes up again.
Nick, let me know whatever it was via email, and we can make sure that it gets addressed next time.
All right, so.
And or in whatever committee is appropriate.
Well, I'll put my objection in.